Buddy.
Chodesh Nisan Sameach. It's nice to see you all. Some familiar faces as well, some new faces. My name is Rabbi Eitan Ben David. I serve as the rabbi in Kehilat Shiftei Yisrael here in Ra'anana. Topic: how Rabbi Akiva revolutionized our Pesach Seder. Now, we're not going to do everything inside of the sources. Did everybody get a source sheet? Yeah? Okay. Passing it around to the... Yeah, there's some over here, so just pass these back or you come get them. The hour is late, so we'll try to end at a reasonable time. Raise your hand if you've been here all morning. Wow, kol hakavod. It's like almost as long as a Pesach Seder. Too bad you haven't had four cups of wine to go along with it. But a coffee instead. So I'm curious if any of you have ever had the following situation. Where you're debating, you know, who should we have for our Pesach Seder this year? And it gets sort of complicated because you've been having Seder with the same people the last 10 years. But they're really boring to have Seder with. So you're thinking of asking some new people, trying something else out. And then you find your mother-in-law has to come. And then your uncle, your distant uncle from Tel Aviv is going to show up. And, you know, you're not sure. It's like, can get complicated. There are a lot of politics about who you invite, who you have your Pesach Seder with. You call up these people like, oh, we've been having the same Seder with those people for 15 years. Sorry, that's not going to work. And you used to be in Chutz Laretz, you used to have two Sederim to be able to work this out a little bit better, one with family, one with friends. And so you're stuck. You don't know what to do, who to have your Pesach Seder with. Right? And this happens, right? Between different social groups and cliques within a community. Now, this very issue appears to have come up also in the time of the Mishnah. Who to invite to your Pesach Seder and who not to invite to your Pesach Seder. Now there's one Pesach Seder that we read about every single year. And who was invited to this Pesach Seder? Who was there? Eliyahu was there? Let me tell you about Eliyahu coming to a Seder. Okay, we're supposed to open the door. I know Usher just spoke about this. Okay, and I'm going to give you, and these are some good ideas. This is a good idea, actually. If you ever plan to get engaged, this is what you can do. I have a friend who was dating a girl for a while, and time to get engaged and get married. So he went to her parents' home for Pesach. This is in Baltimore, okay? And she didn't know he was coming for Pesach. And he had Seder at, like, the neighbors next door. She had no idea he was in Baltimore for Pesach. And they coordinated it. That right when her family was up to go open the door for Eliyahu, she goes and opens the door, and he's standing there outside, ready to propose. So, and that's what he did. So it's a really, is that also how you got engaged? No?
It's a family tradition that the oldest unmarried person opens the door for Eliyahu, and it happened to me that I got engaged right after.
Look at that. I've never met anyone else who did this. So this is like, this is hashkacha pratit here. Wow. So this is, so it's a nice custom. But anyway, so the time of the Gemara, they also were challenged. Who do we invite to the Seder? Who do we leave out? And we know of the story, Maaseh, not with Eliyahu, but with, you know this, Maaseh be Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, be Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, shehayu misubin b'Bnei Brak. They were sitting in B'Nei Brak.
But they didn't all live at the same time.
They didn't what?
They didn't all live at the same time.
They didn't all live at the same time? So what, one of them came back from the dead to be at the Seder? What do you mean? They're sitting at the Seder. What?
I don't know how they all got together.
It's a good question. It's a good question. How did they arrive at the Seder in B'nai Brak? They were discussing, this is the first source, they were discussing Yetziat Mitzrayim that entire night until their students came. And what did their students tell them? You got to get up and go and daven, etc. So this is a famous story. And these, by the way, this is like the, you know, top tier Rabbanim of the post Chorban Jewish community in Israel. In the Chorban, what year is the second Chorban Beit HaMikdash? What year is it in? 70 CE. Who destroyed the Beit HaMikdash? The Romans, okay? And this is the next generation of leaders afterwards. These are some of the most prominent rabbis in the Mishnah. Let me just tell you a little bit about them. Who's Rabbi Eliezer? Rabbi Eliezer is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Okay? Now, I'm just going to... We actually have a chart. If you go to page 4, I tend to be like a visual learner. So let's just look at this chart. It's a little bit fuzzy. Seder Tanaim ve'Amoraim. Okay? These are the Tanaim, or rabbis, who lived in the time of the Mishnah. That's, let's say, around 0 to 230 CE. Okay? So you see Hillel all the way at the top right. Everyone see that? Hillel? Okay, this is all in Eretz Yisrael. Now, right in the middle on the second line, you have someone by the name of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Okay? He was the leader of the Jewish community during the siege of Yerushalayim in 70 CE with the Romans. Remember that famous story? He gets taken out. How does he get taken out of Yerushalayim? In a coffin, right? And he goes, speaks to Vespasian. What does he say to Vespasian? Tainli Ra'anana v'chachameh, right? Give me Yavne v'chachameh. So he's the leader of, you know, he's the pre and post leader of world Jewry at this time. And he has two famous students. One is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. You see that going to the right? Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. And the other one to the left is Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya. These are his two prize students. Let me just tell you quickly about them. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, famous story. He's pretty stubborn. What story does he... Tanur Shalachnai. He's the one who says, I will not listen to even the bat kol coming from Shamayim. The halacha is like me. And in the end, he gets excommunicated, okay? And then you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya on the left side. We'll talk about him in just a second. They both have a really famous student. And what's their student's name? Rabbi Akiva. Amma Rabbi Akiva. Like that one, right? Zeh klal gadol batara. What's the next line? You guys don't know the song? Rabbi Akiva, good. Now, Rabbi Akiva has 5 or 6 famous students. It's getting fuzzier here. One of them is, what's on the right? Who's on the right? Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. Okay, and those are all his famous students. Okay, now, if you look to the right of the line of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Chananya, go all the way to the right, you'll see a star there. You see the stars? Those are the Nisi'im. Those are the sort of the official rabbinic leaders. And that's the Nasi, you see, Rabban Gamliel. Okay, that's Rabban Gamliel. So who is at this Seder in Bnei Brak? Okay, let's just look at the names again. We have Rabbi Eliezer. That's Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, who we haven't identified yet. Look down, you see, he's actually in between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, a little bit lower down with a star, also with a star. You see that? Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah. Okay, and he's the guy who says, Hare ani kaven shivim shana, like, he was really, you know, 17, and one night he woke up in the morning and his beard was all white. We read about this in the Seder. So he was there as well, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, V'Rabbi Akiva, who's the student of these two great sages, V'Rabbi Tarfon, who's the student of, where's Rabbi Tarfon on here? Rabbi Tarfon is, I'm not finding Rabbi Tarfon right now, but he's somewhere in this mix as well, during this time period. So they're all sitting, this is an intergenerational Seder of great rabbinic leaders at this time. Okay, and at this Seder, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah makes this famous comment, I was 17, and now I'm like 70, and he has this insight about Yitzhak Mitzrayim, which I don't want to go into right now. But at the same time that this Seder was happening, there was another Seder happening. The people who were not invited. You remember the Sneetches, Dr. Seuss? Right? Those who have stars on thars and those who don't have any stars on thars, right? That's sort of what you have here. You have in the Tosefta, go to the next source. Tosefta Masecha Pesachim Alacha Yiralef, Ein Maftirin Achar Pesach Hafikoman. We don't, this is a famous line, and it's debatable what it means, but Ein Maftirin Achar Pesach Hafikoman, we don't eat anything after the Hafikoman. Kigone Gozim Tamarim Uklayot, no dessert. Chayav Adam Lasok Bihochot Pesach Kol Halayla. You have to study the laws of Pesach the entire night. Afilu Bein Olavein Leven Bino. Afilu Bein Olavein Atzmo. Even if with your son, your child, or even by yourself, etc. Okay? And then what's the very next source in the Tosefta? Ma'asei b'Rabban Gamliel. Uzkenim shehayu misubin b'veit bitus benzunin. Then you have another Seder Pesach, but this time it's with Rabban Gamliel and the Zekenim, who were sitting in Beit Bitus Ben Zunin in Lud. He was in another Pesach program, okay? So the guys in Bnei Brak were at the, Ritz-Carlton, and he was at the Hilton Pesach. He was the scholar in residence. Vayu asukim bilchot ha-Pesach kol ha-layla. And they were studying the laws of Pesach the whole night. Ad krot ha-gever, until the call of the Tarnagol, until Amud ha-Shachar. And then it was time to get up and go to the study hall. Okay? So this is a really interesting question. Why was Rabban Gamliel not at the same Seder Pesach with all of his other colleagues? What's going on?
At the same time?
Let's assume for a second it was the same time. Okay, and this is discussed, but let's assume it was at the same time. These are both Mishnaic sources. Interestingly, he's not invited to their Seder. That's number one. Number two, and by the way, Lud and Bnei Brak are not so far from each other, right? Yeah. What, 30 minutes, 20 minutes? Yeah. Say again, Dee. Okay, so it's interesting that they come dafka to Bnei Brak. Maybe they got stuck at the lines in Osher Ad and they couldn't get out. So they just said, we're just gonna stay here for Pesach. That's why you should go to the Osher Ad and Petach Tikva, by the way, just on the side. But don't tell anybody because we want to keep the lines better. But and do the electrical thing where it's much much easier to check out. So by the way, there's a by Bnei Brak, what's it called? Michlaf Misubin, I think it's called, right? Is it Michlaf Misubin or it's, yeah.
No, Michlaf Misubin, it's further south.
But it's near Bnei Brak, no?
No, it's on 40. It's
further
south. It's past Gedera.
It's near Bnei Brak, Michlaf Misubin. Where does that come from? It's like really cool to know the street names in Israel. Because these guys were Misubin b'Bnei Brak. What does Misubin mean? They were leaning. They were reclining. Were they reclining with pillows in their chairs, really awkwardly, and like to put your hand around the person's seat next to you? Is that what they were doing? What does Misubin really mean in the Gemara?
Royalty, like a king.
Okay, so if you ever been to, you ever seen like Moorish architecture, or all these like couches and pillows and duvets? They were sort of lying on the floor, and you'd sort of lie down, on your either side, and you had these little tables with hand food that you would, pick and eat. And those movies about the old Roman times?
Yeah.
Maybe you've watched Gladiator. Anyone seen Gladiator? No? Okay, really good movie. A little violent, but it's really good. And so that you see them sitting around the Roman nobles eating this way, okay? That was the culture. That it's in that context that they were misubin. But the point is we have two stories of Pesach here. Why are these rabbis not enjoying the Seder together? Why didn't Rabban Gamliel get an invite to their Seder? What is going on here? And by the way, notice any other differences between these two Sederim? They're different locations, different rabbis. What else is different?
They're not all named.
Okay, they're not all named, correct. But what was the theme? Some people like to do themes. 60s themes, 70s themes. There are people who do different themes at their Siddharam sometimes, right? What were the themes at each of these? What were they discussing in the first one? They were discussing Vayumisaprin b'Yitziat Mitzrayim. They were discussing the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Whereas what was Rabban Gamliel studying? Is the Halachot, Hilchot HaPesach Kol HaLayla. Right? And it says again, Vayu Asukin b'Hilchot HaPesach. What's Hilchot HaPesach referred to? Well, colloquially, we would say today, what's Hilchot HaPesach? Yeah, how to kasher your dishes, and can I use this knife? Can I use my dishwasher? Can I kasher my Caesar stone? All these things. That's Hilchot HaPesach for us today. What's Hilchot HaPesach for Rabban Gamliel? Literally, the laws of Hakravat Korban Pesach, bringing the Korban Pesach. I'm curious, which Seder would you prefer to be at? The one that focuses on halacha, like this is what we do, or the one that's more story, dialogue, midrash, agada?
What's interesting is there are no families there.
No families. It's a good question. Where are the wives?
And the children.
And the children. Even the Talmidim are not there.
Not mentioned.
Interesting. Because what? Because that's an interesting point. Why is it late to discuss Hilchot Pesach? Oh, you're saying they sort of waited a little, they procrastinated in their Pesach preparation. No, but that's an important point. It's not Hilchot Pesach preparation for Pesach, it's Hilchot Pesach, the Korban Pesach. It's the Korban Pesach, which would have been eaten on this night. Now, what's even more intriguing is that, and this is one of my favorite stories in the Gemara, is that these rabbis are found together at other points in time. So they do go out for drinks once in a while. They do hang out. Let me give you an example. Look at the next source, Masechet Sukkah Daf Kaf Gimel Amud Aleph. We're discussing, can you make a sukkah on a boat? Can you make a sukkah on a boat? Okay. Anyone ever try this at home? No? Ah, interesting. Okay. So, yafeh. So, ha'useh sukkato b'rosh ha'sfina. A person who makes their sukkah on the front, on their boat. So Rabban Gamliel posel. Rabban Gamliel says this is prohibited. The Rabbi Akiva machshir. Rabbi Akiva says this is fine. This is a good sukkah. Maasei b'Rabban Gamliel v'Rabbi Akiva. There's a story of them. Shayu ba'in b'svina. They are coming back from a cruise together. Okay, and in the Caribbean or something. Or usually, actually, they probably went to Rome to discuss things with the Caesar. Amad Rabbi Akiva v'asa sukkah b'rosh ha'svina. Rabbi Akiva, following his own opinion, makes a sukkah on the front of the boat. Okay. Yeah, you know where they sing that Titanic song? That's spot on the boat, on the front of the boat. Okay, the machar, and what happens? The machar nashva ruach vakarata. The wind took away Rabbi Akiva's sukkah, and it was gone. Imagine you wake up the next morning, there's no sukkah. It's gone. The wind took it. So how does Rabbi Gamliel respond? Oh, Rabbi Akiva, I'm so sorry. This is terrible. Empathy. No, he says, Amar la Rabbi Gamliel, Akiva, heichan sukkatcha, where'd your sukkah go? Right, so he saw this as a way to, shtuch, Rabbi Akiva. See, I told you, you can't build a sukkah and a sfina because the wind is too strong. It's going to be unstable. So we see that they do spend time together and they are on a cruise together. So why don't they have a Pesach Seder together? Okay, so this is a question. I want to share with you three answers to this question. Okay, answer number one is a technical halachic explanation for this. And this can be found in, let's start with the first. Number one is the Gemara Masechet Brachot Daf Kav Zayin. Okay? And with this, we need a little context. There's a really interesting story. You have to understand the history here. The Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. The leader of the Jewish, the official, and this is a key point, the official leader of the Jewish community afterwards is Rabban Gamliel. He's the Nasi at this time period. Okay, and this is a time of, essentially, of crisis. The Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed. There are still Jews in Judea. There's still Jews in this area, but the Romans are the ultimate rulers. And, we're going to have, this is going to culminate in the Bar Kokhba revolt in 132 CE, about 70 years after the, 70 years after the previous Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. And Rabban Gamliel is trying to establish stability for the Jewish people at this time in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And Rabban Gamliel, he's a tough guy. And he does not like when people disagree with him. Okay? Do not undermine my authority is a very key message for Rabban Gamliel. And he does a number of things to establish and stabilize Jewry at this time. For example, anyone know one thing that he sort of organized and composed? Anyone know? Important tefillah that we say every single day. Anybody know?
Great Assembly.
Okay, the Great Assembly. Now that's earlier in history. He establishes the Shemona Esrei. He establishes. He's the one who he fixes it as a fixed text. This is the tefillah we're going to use throughout the Jewish world. That's one example of something that he does. He also deals with the calendar, and there's a famous story where he has a debate with one of his colleagues, Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, who we saw that they live in the same generation, and they had a debate about when Yom Kippur falls out. Okay? That was a pretty big debate. I mean, it's not like, oh, can I, Can I go to this? This is a pretty fierce, this is a big difference. If you're not going to eat on this day or you're going to keep, Yom Kippur on another day. So Rabban Gamliel was 100% certain that he was right. So he forced Rabbi Yoshua to come to him on the day of that he thought it was Yom Kippur. Come to me, and this way he would show his sort of subservience or that he submits to Rabban Gamliel's religious authority. Okay, now Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya was no schlepper. He was a huge Talmid Chacham, one of the greatest of his generation. So, but Rabban Gamliel says, no, you have to submit to my authority on this issue. That's a famous story in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. He then has another story with Rabbi Yoshua. The story in Masechet Brachot Daf Kav Zayin, they're debating, does one have an obligation to daven arvit at night? Okay, do you actually have an obligation? Shacharit is based on the korban tamid, shel shachar. Mincha is based on the offering they would give in the afternoon. There is no offering at night. You know what they would have at night? They would just let the korbanot continue to burn. Okay, there's some people who like, their meat, raw, or they like it, some people like it well done. People like medium rare. Other people like well done. If you like the well done meat, you have to wait till the nighttime when they would let the stuff sort of burn that, didn't finish burning on the Mizbeach that day. So Arvit is it an obligation or not an obligation? This is a debate between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua and Masechet Brachot. Rabbi Yoshua, if you look at the source here, there's approach number one here. Rabbi Yoshua says it's a reshut. Rabban Gamliel says it's a chova. Okay, so they have a debate, and the students are asking, what's the story with this anyway? Rabban Gamliel doesn't like the fact that Rabbi Yoshua has disagreed with him. So he tells Rabbi Yoshua to come stand up in the front of the Beit Midrash and to just stand there. He sort of embarrasses him. He makes him stand there, sort of like this in the corner, everyone looking at him, and this is what Rabban Gamliel does to him. And the students get very upset about this, because they feel loyal to their teacher, Rabbi Yoshua. They say, you can't do this. This is terrible what you've done. Ultimately, Rabban Gamliel gets deposed from from being the Nasi. Okay? And who takes his place as Nasi? Anybody know? Who takes his place? Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah. They choose Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, but he's very young. Okay, and that's then he has that dream, and he says, wakes up, and he's suddenly a little bit older, and he's great. And ultimately, what they had was sort of a rotation: Rabbi Yoshua, Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, and they would switch off different weeks that they were the Rosh Hashiva of the Beit Midrash. But this is Rabban Gamliel trying to stabilize Jewry after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. So explanation number one for why they're at different Sederim, why? Because they didn't really like Rabban Gamliel all that much. It wasn't a personal thing. There were differences of opinion about how to lead Jewry in Israel at the time. Rabban Gamliel took a very fierce approach. He arrogated power to himself. And he had a very specific way of looking at things. And these other Rabbanim had different perspectives about how to lead the Jewish people at this time in a moment of crisis. And they didn't want to have a Seder together for this reason, because they had different perspectives on some of these issues. They felt that Rabban Gamliel was sort of too top-down. He was too authoritative. He was too, he abused his authority a little bit. This is, yeah. Talking about, 80s, 90s, 100s, 110s, CE. They lived through, they may have been young when it happened. And but yeah, exactly. This is post-Khorban. This is all post-Khorban. And it's post, we're in crisis mode. We are in crisis mode, right? Because we have to figure out, and this is going to be an important question, how do we create continuity after crisis? How do we continue Judaism, in a world where things are very different than they were beforehand? Okay? That's explanation number one of how we resolve this conflict. Explanation number two is a technical explanation brought by Rav Ruvain Margoliot, where he says, why these rabbis didn't have the Seder Pesach with Rabban Gamliel? Because there's a halacha that you're not allowed to do Haseba in front of your rabbi. Why? It's inappropriate. It's disrespectful. What, you're going to lounge on a lounge chair in front of your rabbi who normally sit in front of, you know, with, you know, Yirav Pachad? It's not appropriate for students to sit this way. And because they couldn't do Haseva, therefore they decided to have a separate Seder. Okay? Now, the problem with this is that, second, what?
There were other teachers and...
Exactly, there were other students and other Talmidim in each of these places, so it doesn't seem to resolve that, you know, that issue. And by the way, this may be the reason why it emphasizes how you misubin b'Bnei Brak. They were, you know, reclining in B'nai Brak, and it wouldn't have been respectful for them to be in front of their teacher. The truth is, by the way, al pi halacha, if the teacher is mochel on his kavod, they're allowed to then do haseva in front of him. But this is the second explanation. Third and primary explanation is brought down by the Maharatz Chayos. Okay, Maharatz Chayot. This is on top of page 2 here, and he shares a really fascinating explanation of the difference between these different rabbis. The first explanation we gave is there may have been a little bit of a political difference between these rabbis and Rabbi Gamliel. Second explanation, there was a technical halachic problem of reclining in front of their teacher. The third explanation is that there was something more fundamental at play here. There's actually a fundamental difference of opinion about what the Seder really is about and how to celebrate the Seder post-Chorban. And the Maharatz Chayot brings a number of examples to prove that Rabban Gamliel actually had a very interesting perspective on what we're supposed to do at the Seder Pesach. So we're not going to read the Maharatz Chayot inside, okay? But let's look at some of the sources down below, bottom of page 2, that point out some of these differences. We're not going to look at this. We won't read this too much inside, but we'll talk about it outside. Number one, you see, and I did number one, number two, number three, and you go to the next page, number four, number five. I'm going to show you five examples of Rabban Gamliel's unique perspective on Seder Pesach. Now, what's interesting is that this debate that we're going to see that is going to emerge between Rabban Gamliel's perspective on the Seder and Rabbi Akiva's, it plays out in the version of the Haggadah that we have today. Okay, we sort of look at the Haggadah very often as almost like, it's just like this is the text of the Haggadah. But we forget that it has, there are stages of evolution in it. There are different personalities, there are different values and things pulling and, you know, pushing in different directions. And the Haggadah that we have today is really the summation of a number of, or the culmination of a number of debates about how to celebrate Pesach, you know, nowadays. So source number one points out, there's a discussion about how you roast your Korban Pesach. Has anyone here ever been to Pennsylvania? Anyone ever? Sometimes you're driving along Pennsylvania, and it's a state in America, and a good Sunday, maybe July 4th weekend, you might just see, okay, like a huge pig, okay, on a shipud, on a, you know, on a spit, and it always has an apple in its mouth. That's just the way it is. There's always an apple in the mouth, okay? And they're roasting the chazir to have a barbecue on a Sunday afternoon, right? So this, in fact, is how they would have the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach had to be roasted over a spit. Has anyone ever sort of eaten meat like that? Have you ever been at a barbecue of that sort? Of course, the South Africans, of course, of course. And we call it a bribe, by the way, right? So there's a debate about how you have, you know, how you're supposed to roast the Korban Pesach. It's supposed to be tzli esh. Remember, the Jews in Mitzrayim are trying to, you know, show to the Mitzrayim, we're going to eat your God. We're actually going to sacrifice, kill your God right in front of you in the public square, and we're going to roast it right in front of you. And that's what they did. So there's an opinion here. Amar Rabbi Tzadok, look at the last line of source number one. Amar Rabbi Tzadok, Maseb Rabban Gamliel Shamar LeTevi Avdo. Rabban Gamliel said to Tevi, his servant, Tzei Utzla Lanot HaPesach Ala Askela, go and roast our Korban Pesach on the grill. Okay? Now, this is his opinion that how it has to be roasted. Anything sound strange about that sentence to you, or what Rabban Gamliel told his servant to go do? First of all, we don't have... Okay, so... Yeah, Femo, good. Today, do we have roasted meat at our Pesach Seder? No. Teimanim, by the way, do sometimes, but for the most part, we don't. Why not? Because you don't want to look like you're having a Korban Pesach. One second. When did this story happen? We're talking about after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. And yet Ramban Gamliel is still
there.
Is still, you know, yeah, he's bringing a Korban Pesach, right? If anyone here thinks the Zehut party is a new party, maybe this is a predecessor to the Zehut party. They're bringing Korbanot on the Temple Mount. That was a joke. Okay, you know, I'm not saying you have to vote for it, but look at what Rashi says. This was after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. After the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, Rabban Gamliel is still bringing a Korban Pesach. Yeah. Ah, Yefemot. Very interesting point. There was a rabbi in the 19th century, I'm just forgetting his name right now, who sort of encouraged, why don't we have a Korban Pesach today? Do we really need a Beit HaMikdash to have a Korban Pesach? So this is something that he, but not everyone was necessarily doing it, right? And yet he seems to have a Korban Pesach, even after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. Let's look at source number two. Another discussion about how to roast the Korban Pesach. You know, when you put the animal on the spit, what do you do with its arms and legs? So there are some, anyone here know what turducken is? What's turducken? No one knows? It's a chicken stuffed inside a turkey on for Thanksgiving. Or a duck stuck in a turkey, whatever it is, okay? It's supposed to be very tasty, okay? So, but anyway, you know, some people, you know how you like to put stuffing inside of an animal, you know, you like all the fats and the meats and all the stuff, you know, the juices. So where do you put the limbs of the animal? Do the limbs stay on the outside? Okay. Which is what Rabban Gamliel calls a gedim mikulas. This is the Mishnah Masachet Yedot Perek Gimel Yud, Mishnah Aleph Yud. Or do the limbs go on the inside? Do you stick the limbs inside the cavity of the animal? Rabban Gamliel claims it's on the outside. Okay, it's on the outside. So what?
Huh? It's a normal way.
It's a normal way to do it, right? So if he were making a Thanksgiving dinner, he wouldn't put any stuffing. He wouldn't, you know, all these things would be on the outside. So again, we see this discussion with Rabban Gamliel, again, about the nature of the Korban Pesach. What are you debating this stuff for? The Beit HaMikdash is already destroyed. Okay, let's look at source number three. Source number three is a story of... Now, the rabbis sometimes have to add months to the calendar. What do we call this? Shana Mu'uberet. This year is a Shana Mu'uberet. Which month did we add? We had Adar Aleph and then Adar Bet, right? Now, very often, you know, rabbis would have to make the calculation, you know, close to the season to see. The whole reason we do this, but why do we do this? Anyone know why we do this? So Pesach falls in Chodesh Aviv, Tikuvat Aviv. We lose 11 days in the Jewish calendar every single year, so you have to push it back. 7 out of every 19 years, we add a month. And so we lose 11 days over a 19-year period, which equals 209. We add 7 months in that 19-year period, 210, and that's how we keep the Jewish calendar both solar and lunar at the same time. If you don't get the math, it's fine. But the point is that rabbis had to add months to the calendar. Now, Rabban Gamliel sends a letter in this Gemara on Masechet Sanhedrin Daf Yud Aleph. He sends a letter to all the communities in Chutz La'aretz. Okay? And he says, you know, they go up to Har HaBayit, they're looking out at the moon and they're, you know, discussing the seasons. And he says, write a letter to the communities that, listen, the lambs are not thickened, they're not fattened enough. And the, you know, all the animals are not really ready to be brought as korbanot, v'zimnin d'aviv alomata, and the time for spring has not come yet, and therefore what are we doing? We're pushing off Pesach for another month, we're going to add Adar Sheni, and that's what they did. Now, what's the rationale for him changing, you know, adding a month to the calendar? Let's see, again, Korban Pesach. What's that have to do with it? Today we add months because of the seasonal problem, you know, that we don't want Pesach to be in the winter. But he seems to again be talking about the Korban Pesach itself. Let's go to the top of page 3. And okay, so the Ran says that this was you know, he's talking about in future times. When we bring a Korban Pesach, this would be a reason to technically add a month to the calendar. However, the Maariv Chayei says explicitly, it was because he was bringing the Korban Pesach that year, and that's why it mattered to him. Let's look at source number four. Okay, source number four. We have a discussion here, but when do we start asking for rain here in Israel? When do we start asking, saying, you know, reciting the Tein Talu Matali Racha? When do we do that? Okay, so there's a machloket, whether it's the third of Cheshvan or the seventh of Cheshvan. This is when the rains start, right? So Rabban Gamliel says it should be the seventh. Push it back a little further, which is ultimately about 2 weeks after Sukkot. 2 weeks after Sukkot, and we start asking for rain. Why then? Rabban Gamliel says in Surah number 4, there's Masechet Tanit Daf Yud, Amud Aleph, he says, this way all the people who do Aliyah L'Regel can go home. Yeah, it won't be raining, but you don't want to have him, you don't want to give him rain. But wait a second, right? Wait a second. The Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. Who's doing Aliyah L'Regel anymore, right? So we see that Rabban Gamliel is insisting on maintaining this practice of Aliyah L'Regel. This is foremost in his mind. And now we go to source number five. And source number five is a source that you're going to recognize. Okay, this comes from, it's the Haggadah, of the Rambam's version of the Haggadah, but it's very similar to ours. Rabban Gamliel Omer. Kol shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu bePesach lo yatzai yidei chovato. And what are the three things? And what's the chidush here, Nu? Pesach, matzah umaror, fine. Rabban Gamliel wants the Korban Pesach to play a central role in the Pesach Seder. Why? Because he's still bringing a Korban Pesach, and this is important to him. Okay, and the milk, the what does it mean? Lo yatzai yidei chovato. Some say you haven't fulfilled your obligation of telling the story. But what's the real pshat of lo yatzai yidei chovato? You haven't fulfilled your obligation of eating it if you don't also talk about it. Okay, this is sort of the visual part of the Pesach Seder, and so this is a fifth source which points to the fact that Rabban Gamliel believed that the central part of the Pesach Seder, even post destruction, is the Korban Pesach. And there's indication that he brought the Korban Pesach after the Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. And for him, the central, if you bought Rabban Gamliel's Seder, Pesach Seder, Pesach Haggadah, right? You know, you buy Rabbi Jonathan Sachs's, and you buy Rav Rimon's, and you go to the store. If you were to buy Rabban Gamliel's Seder Haggadah, it would be about the Korban Pesach. Okay? Now, in contrast to Rabban Gamliel, who, if you remember, go back to that first source, what are they studying at his Seder? This is a Seder that no one here wants to have been invited to, because they're studying strict on the last soak. Bihilchot HaPesach Kol HaLaita. They're studying the laws of the Korban Pesach the whole night. In contrast to this Seder, there's another Seder taking place. Only a few miles away. It's in Bnei Brak. It's not in Lud. It's a different Pesach program. There are different advantages to this Pesach program. And there, they're not talking about the Korban Pesach. What are they discussing? Yitziat Mitzrayim. Sipur Yitziat Mitzrayim, as it says explicitly in this first source, Vayu Misaprin bi Yitziat Mitzrayim kol ota halayla. They were discussing the Exodus, the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Now, if Rabban Gamliel represents the past, the desire to maintain focus on Korban Pesach even after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, then Rabbi Akiva represents not the past, but the future. Rabbi Akiva represents, says, if we want to maintain the past, you know what we have to do? We have to change a little bit. We have to change our focus. We have to evolve a little bit. Okay? Judaism is really, it's interesting. It's based on an interesting dynamic. On the one hand, nothing changes. Nothing ever changes. We keep our minagim, we keep the halachot, and we keep the same customs that we've always done. And yet, at the same time, if Judaism hadn't changed throughout history, I'm not sure it would be here today. It's had to evolve in order to maintain, to stay the same in a sense, right? And if Rabban Gamliel is about focusing on the past, Rabbi Akiva is about saying, we have to find a new way. We have to find a new, create a new Pesach Seder that's going to maintain us through times of Galut. Let's look at what Rabbi Akiva focuses on, okay? And if you go to Talmud Bavli Masechet Pesachim Daf Kuf Tet Zayin Amud Bet, we have a debate here about What bracha do we say at the end of Magid? What bracha do we say? You remember what the bracha is? The end of Magid, the end of telling the story. What do we say there? So Rabbi Tarfon, look at there's a debate about the formulation of the bracha. One says we say the bracha, Bracha Hashem Gaal Asher Gaalanu v'Gaalat Avotenu. You redeemed us and you redeemed our ancestors. What does Rabbi Akiva say we should say the bracha is? Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kein Hashem Elokeinu Yagi'enu L'moadim L'Rigalim Acherim Abayim Nikartenu. Hashem, we should also have future redemption and future moadim and future regalim, where we should return to Jerusalem and rebuild Yerushalayim, etc., etc. Baruch Hashem Gal Yisrael. As opposed to a focus on the past, Rabbi Akiva, he does want you to tell the story of Yitzhiyah Mitzrayim, but what bracha are we saying? We're saying a bracha that focuses on the future. Something new. Something different. We're going to build something new in the future. And we also know there's a very famous story, the end of Masechet Makot, of these same rabbis, Ukvar Haya, Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, Mahalchin Baderach. They're taking a hike, they're taking a tiyul in Yerushalayim, and it couldn't have been a Sunday. They didn't have off on Sunday. On a Friday morning, you know, they stop at a Beit Cafe, they walk around a little bit, and what happens? They go up to Har HaBayit, and what happens there? Rabban, they're all crying. And what's Rabbi Akiva say? Akiva says he's laughing, right? Even though there are foxes coming out of the Temple Mount, he says, what's he say? Why is Rabbi Akiva laughing if they're crying?
Because it was proved.
Says if the nevuah of their destruction has come, then it means that soon the nevuah of the geulah of redemption will come soon as well. And so we see here that Rabbi Akiva has a different perspective than his other colleagues. There's a certain optimism, there's a certain hope. This hope translated into certain political activity, that he supported Mered Bar Kochva, he supported the Bar Kochva revolt, which was a failure, but in hindsight, you know, that's only in hindsight, okay? And this was an attempt to return Jewish sovereignty to the Jewish people following the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, yeah? Correct. He started learning when he was very late in life. So it's Rabbi Akiva, as opposed to sort of being stuck in the past, the perspective of Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva says, we have to push forward. Okay? We have to, if we don't sort of, not give up the past, but detach ourselves a little bit from the past, we're not going to be able to rebuild for the future. And so Rabbi Akiva says, we have to go back to the seeds of our strength. We have to go back to the original story of Mitzrayim. We have to draw strength from that story. And we have to then build something for the future. And so he builds a Pesach Seder, not around Korban Pesach, but around the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Okay, and that's what they were talking about. They were talking about Yetziat Mitzrayim, how God redeemed us, the Jewish people came out of Egypt. And this may have been the sort of the beginning of his campaign to fight against the Romans and to rebuild Jewish sovereignty. One second. So this is two really different perspectives. Now, just one last piece here. What were they discussing at their Pesach Seder? So there are some who say, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Maimon, Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Cook, and others suggest, what were they discussing at their Seder in Bnei Brak? They were scheming, you know, for the revolt of Bar Kochva. Which is interesting. Rabbi Gamliel is trying to create sort of stability, and Rabbi Akiva is trying to rebuild, in a sense. So these are two different models of how we deal with change and how we deal with crisis in Jewish history. Do we try to hold on to the past, or do we sort of create something new? There's no one answer to this question. It's a dynamic tension. But here we have, built into the Pesach Seder, Rabbi Gamliel does appear in the Seder, but just a small piece, Kol Shalom Omer Shoshad Vrim La Ilai Tadei Chavato. But really the Seder is the Seder of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, Shayu Mesaprin Yitziat Mitzrayim, and his story, Maasei, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Akiva, etc. In Bnei Brak, that's what appears in our Haggadah. So lots to think about here, and Bezrat Hashem, this Pesach should bring about the Geulah Shleimah B'mirav Yameinu. Amen. Okay, Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Thank you.